Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. That's a piece from the 1958 French film Elevator to the Gallows, performed by jazz legend Miles Davis. Music plays a huge role in movies. It helps evoke certain emotions, like happy or sad, or some of the other ones I've heard of. And filmmakers rely on music, either through a soundtrack or original score, to bring the audience along on the journey. With the Oscars coming up this weekend, we wanted to take a closer look at the music that has made the movies, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Is there a song, score, or soundtrack that's memorable to you? Do you listen to movie music outside of the movie? Do you find some new music to listen to from watching a movie? Do you like soundtracks or scores better? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or share your favorites on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jocelyn Sapaniak-Gillies is an associate professor of English and film studies at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She wrote the book, The Optical Vacuum, Spectatorship, and Modernized American Theater Architecture. Jocelyn, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. I just said score or soundtrack. What's the difference?
Sure. Well, a score is really is all instrumental music generally written for the movie. And generally speaking, soundtracks are songs, often pop songs at this point. The main way we can think about the difference between the two is that none of the characters in the universe of the film, what we would call the diegesis, none of them can hear the score. The score is just there for the pleasure of the audience and for the audience to experience some kind of emotional journey, to heighten the emotion in a particular moment in time. But the soundtrack, you know, it might be playing in a car while characters are driving along. It might be playing in a club. It can be something that's either a part of the narrative or not a part of the narrative.
Now, you have mentioned to our producer that music has gone along with movies since even before movies had sound. Can you tell us about those early days?
Yeah, I think it's so important to understand that there is this deep, deep connection between the image and music, really since the nascence of cinema. So in the silent era, of course, there's no music coming from the movie itself, but that doesn't mean there wasn't music happening in the moment. From a very, very early moment, there are various kinds of instruments being played in the movie theater, especially things like upright pianos. But the most important instrument that we associate with the silent era is, of course, the organ. And the organ has just a pretty interesting history. Robert Hope Jones is the person who popularized the organ in the movie theater. And he was an English organ maker who started off making organs for churches in the UK. And then he thought, well, this is such an amazing instrument that can convey all of the power and might and majesty of an entire orchestra, but that can all be located in a single instrument. So he actually moves to the United States and popularizes placing organs in movie theaters. I think that says a lot about how we think about the connections between a kind of mystical, spiritual experience in a church and in the movie theater as well. Wurlitzer eventually buys buys his company, but that's the person that we can credit with the organ in the movie theater.
And then movies get sound, and we can have songs inside of movies. Let's hear one famous example from back in the 1930s. Here it is.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of.
So Jocelyn, there's kind of another category, score, soundtrack, and then here's a person actually singing the music within the movie.
That's right. And of course, as sound enters film production at the very end of the 1920s and into the 1930s, that becomes a real possibility. Musicals, of course, take off because you can now have people singing and dancing in the film. But that's such a wonderful example, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which not only has this amazing kind of emotional wallop in the moment, but becomes forever associated with Judy Garland. So it's a song that has really lasting legacies, even outside the actual text of the film.
Now, here's another one that can evoke powerful emotions of a very different sort than Somewhere Over the Rainbow, one that you like, and I've talked to the composer on this very show. Here's a listen to a scarier one. So that's the theme from Halloween by director and soundtrack composer John Carpenter, and I was lucky enough, a high point in my Radiotronic career, I interviewed John Carpenter about his movie music, which was a blast. Can you talk about a strange character like John Carpenter?
I am so totally jealous of that, Rob, because I am such a huge John Carpenter fan. I actually saw him perform his synth scores in Milwaukee a couple years ago.
Okay, now I'm jealous of you. I missed that.
It was awesome. He's such a kind of unique figure in terms of the integration of the music and the image, because as you mentioned, he wrote his own synthesizer scores for his movies. And this is not normal. This is not normal. So he does it for Halloween, which is probably the most famous of his scores, but also for The Fog and The Thing. He has this kind of amazing history of doing that. They're thought of as kind of cheesy for a while, but then we see in a more contemporary kind of art horror mode, a resurgence of interest in the synth score. So movies like It Follows or The Guest or other kinds of recent horror movies that are interested in the history of horror, they end up going back to the John Carpenter style of synthesizer horror scores. It's really, really interesting that he moves from being thought of as kind of outré, a little bit antiquated, to something that people then recognize as very, very useful for heightening the suspense and thrill of a horror movie.
We are talking about movie music, soundtrack scores, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your favorites. Jocelyn Sapaniak-Gillies is with us from UW-Milwaukee. Let's go to your calls now. Mark is with us in Wauwatosa. Mark, hello.
Hello. For me, Star Wars, the music by John Williams just made that movie. It would have been just a so-so, space science fiction flick if it hadn't been for that wonderful soundtrack by John Williams.
Yeah, that's a great win. And Jocelyn, this is kind of a lifetime achievement award there. John Williams, Star Wars and Indiana Jones movies and so many more. Can you talk about him a little bit?
Yeah, I think he's certainly the person that we think about when we think about the power of the score. The one that I always think about is actually in Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
The moment where everybody sees the brontosauruses for the first time, and it's so thrilling. But that moment means nothing without the presence of that really overpowering, really, really powerful music, that it really, it creates a sense of wonder in the audience that the image alone cannot fully achieve.
Thanks a lot for that call, Mark. I appreciate it. Are there soundtracks, Jocelyn, that you just like listen to, you know, just for the heck of it, even detached from the movie itself?
Yeah, the ones that I do would be kind of imbued with a sense of nostalgia. This is going to sound so silly, but when my husband and I first met, he had a Corolla that only had a tape deck, and we only had one tape, and it was the single soundtrack. And I'm a child of the 90s, so it's actually the single soundtrack, just because I think of going on road trips and hearing Pearl Jam over and over and over again.
Interesting. Okay, the single soundtrack. Well, how about you? Is there something that you like to listen to from a movie, even without the movie attached to it? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to check out another one now, Ennio Morricone, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. We'll maybe give a little listen to that in a minute, but Darren on Facebook pointed toward that one, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Morricone passed away last summer, and his music's so key to so many Western films and others. And actually, a buddy of mine, speaking of listening, did a little compilation that he called Songs for Smokin' and Gun Totin' that I still listen to this day. Can you talk a little bit about Ennio Morricone, Jocelyn?
That is the greatest title of a mix ever. Morricone had the most incredibly long career. It's really striking. And of course, he's Italian and then works with Sergio Leone for doing these kinds of like spaghetti westerns in the U.S. The Western itself in the 50s and then in the 60s when Morricone is working on their scores, that actually is a place that we can point to, a particular genre we can point to that has a really notable history in terms of the integration of the sound and the image. Western scores became so very, very popular, partially due to people like Morricone. But he also worked on just an abundance of other films. One of my personal favorites that he wrote the score for is Gillo Pontecorvo's The Battle of Algiers from 1966, which is a pretty tremendous political film. So just a really incredible long career.
We're talking to Jocelyn Sapania-Gillies right now about music and the movies ahead of the Oscars this weekend. She's an associate professor of English and film studies at UW-Milwaukee. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What are some of your favorite movie soundtracks and scores? Which ones do you think have been underappreciated? What kind of emotions or feelings do songs bring to you in the movies? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're hearing the song Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, from the 1983 movie of the same name, starring the late David Bowie, about an English soldier captured by Japanese forces during World War II. Mentioned by Tim on the Ideas Network Facebook page as one of his favorite movie scores. We're talking about movies and music right now ahead of the Academy Awards. Jocelyn Sapania-Gillies stays with us, Associate Professor of English and Film Studies at UW-Milwaukee. And you at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite movie music? 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go back to your calls now. Rusty is with us in Dalton. Rusty, hi.
Hi. Well, way back in the 70s when I was in college, I took a course on film and so forth. And one of the things that we concentrated on was Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. And the music for that is just it's just some violin screeching music, and it's sheer terror. Now, and they put a lot of time into that, and that was what I wanted to comment on.
Rusty, thank you so much. And that, I feel like, Jocelyn, even if people haven't seen the movie Psycho, they've heard the violin thing that Rusty is talking about.
Oh my gosh. Yes, that is that everybody knows exactly that that piece of music. And that is another piece of music that's so inextricably tied to the scene in which it occurs. And just to note, this isn't really about the music, but it is about the sound effect of the stabbing in the shower, right? The stabbing of Janet Leigh in the shower. What they used to create that kind of sound was a stabbing into a melon. So it kind of fits with the shrieking violins. You have the moment in time and then the horror of the violins and then the horror of the sound of what is actually just a knife being stabbed into a melon. But it all works through the power of cinematic illusion.
I did that for a radio drama once, but it was a pumpkin. I stabbed a pumpkin repeatedly. I was my own Foley guy for a radio thing I did years and years ago. It worked pretty well. The melon probably would have been better. Thanks a lot for that call. Let's go to Jeannie now in Waupaca. Jeannie, hi.
Hi. I have a question. You know, you're talking about movies and films. Would it be considered a score or soundtrack when you're talking about, you know, animations like the old Tom and Jerry, where, you know, there was no speaking, it was all music?
Jeannie, thanks a lot. Now, a lot of those had scores, and I think a lot of them just, like, grabbed some random classical music, too. I don't know, Jocelyn, do you have thoughts on our cartoon musics?
Yeah, I mean, we would describe those as scores, and you're right, Rob, that a lot of them would use just kind of something that was sort of more public domain. You could just kind of slap onto the cartoon. But one of my favorite examples, and I teach the history of animation, I always teach this cartoon because it's my favorite Warner Brothers cartoon, is That's Opera Doc, we have Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd doing the standard, you know, run and chase each other, but it's all set to a kind of pseudo Wagner opera, and it's absolutely hilarious. It's poking fun of the opera music, but also of the repetition of Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny continually engaging in this cycle of violence. It's just wonderful.
Thanks a lot for that call. Travis on Facebook says, every single movie by Wes Anderson is driven by incredible soundtracks. To pick one would be next to impossible. No problem, Travis. We picked one for you. This is from The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, CEO George's, and I'm mispronouncing it probably. He covered a lot of David Bowie songs. Here's a great one, Life on Mars.
Seu poder vem do sol, minha medida. Então vem.
Wow, I forgot how good that was. I think I recall that David Bowie was a fan of these covers of his work to Jocelyn. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, that's great. I think about also a kind of similar moment, but in the wonderful Pedro Almodovar film, Talk to Her, where there's this brief concert that happens, and it's Caetano Veloso, the great Brazilian singer-songwriter, singing Cucuru Cucu Paloma, and it is just a magical, magical sequence. But another moment where a very respected and renowned singer-songwriter is performing, and it's just a moment of heavy, heavy emotional import.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Doug is with us in Lancaster. Doug, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a comment and a shameless plug. my comment is... there are two directors out right now that I just think are perfect with integrating music and scenes, Quentin Tarantino and Martin Scorsese. There are certain songs that come on the air that I hear that take me immediately to scenes within their movies. Secondly, we have a very good friend of mine who I met at camp many years ago in Muckwonago. He's from Sheboygan, and he's a producer out in California. He has produced a movie called Original Motion Picture Soundtrack, which if you're a fan of 80s movies, this is for you. He has interviewed people like Danny Elfman, Kevin Bacon, Corey Feldman, all the major composers of a lot of the popular songs that were out during 80s movies. It's a must-see. I'm not sure where you could find it right now. And it was released in 2017. I have not seen it on streaming services, but if you can get a chance to see it, get it.
A movie called The Original Motion Picture Soundtrack about motion picture soundtracks. Thanks a lot for sharing that recommendation. He mentioned there, Jocelyn, a couple of directors, Scorsese and Tarantino, for working music into their works.
I am so excited to get to talk about Scorsese, because if I think about one American director who is a master of the soundtrack, the first person that comes to mind for me is Martin Scorsese. And I want to point in particular to one of his earliest films, Mean Streets, from 1973, which is one of my favorites of his. And that is a really early moment, but still a watershed moment in the development of how he approaches soundtracks. It's this really incredible combination of pop, things like the Rolling Stones, Jumpin' Jack Flash, or the Ronettes, Be My Baby, as well as Italian opera music. And it works together to create a kind of chronology of events. And there's one moment in particular that I absolutely love for illustrating how a particular song can create an entire experience for the audience. And that's when Harvey Keitel just gets absolutely blotto drunk in the bar, right? He's just absolutely wasted. And the way that we understand his state of mind is that this novelty doo-wop song called Rubber Biscuit by the Chips, it's this kind of manic, hysterical song, is playing. And it is because of how almost illegible that song is, how kind of fun but a little bit nauseating it is, that we're really put into the absolutely drunken state of mind of Harvey Keitel. It's an absolutely masterful integration of music and image.
There's Rubber Biscuit. Yeah, I could see that as a good illustrative drunk scene. Time for, I think, one more caller. How about Elizabeth in Oshkosh? Elizabeth, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Elizabeth?
I wanted to bring up Chariots of Fire, written by Vangelis from 1980, I think it was. When I first heard that song on the radio, I couldn't figure out what it was. I'm calling the radio station, you know, trying to figure out what this song is. Then I found out the movie. The movie was just great. But and the movie actually won over a bunch of other bigger blockbuster movies. And I think the music theme, the whole score, had a lot to do with it.
Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call. We're just about out of time. I'll see you a Vangelis Chariots of Fire and raise you a Vangelis Blade Runner soundtrack. Are there newer soundtracks jostling with the Oscars around the corner? Anything that you are really enjoying these days, soundtrack-wise or score?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite film scores right now is Micah Levy, who works under the name Mikachu. And Micah Levy is an experimental songwriter and composer who first kind of came on the scene with the score for the wonderful Jonathan Glazer film Under the Skin from 2014. And that film's about an alien played by Scarlett Johansson who comes to Earth. She comes to Glasgow and has to kind of figure out how to integrate amongst human beings. The score is so it's so strange, and it really puts us in this uncomfortable frame of mind where we too are experiencing how bizarre it would be to have these new perceptions, these human perceptions, when one has been an alien and never has experienced these things before. I think Mikachu is just incredible. They also did the score for Jackie in 2016, for Monos in 2019, and the upcoming film Zola, which I'm really excited for, which is finally coming out this year. So that's
we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Jocelyn Sapadiak-Gillies from UW-Milwaukee. You can keep sharing your favorite movie music on the Ideas Network Facebook page. By the way, tomorrow on Central Time, we'll check out which Oscar nominees we ought to go out and see with Reggie, the real critic. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.